কল্যাণে হারে গোপী জন
Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda ki Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki Sambhita Bhaktavarinda ki Nithai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Reading this morning from Canto 10, Chapter 29, Text 14.
Nrinam nishreyas yarkaya.
Nrinam nishreyas yarkaya.
Yakir bhagavato nripa.
Yakir bhagavato nripa.
Avyayasya prameyasya.
Avyayasya prameyasya.
Nirgunasya gunatmanah.
Nirgunasya gunatmanah.
Nrinam nishreyas yarkaya. Rinam Vishreya Yasyarthaya.
Rinam Vishreya Sarthaya.
Yakir Bhagavato Nripa.
Yakir Bhagavato Nripa.
Avyayasya Prameyasya.
Avyayasya Prameyasya.
Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha.
Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha.
Here, Bhagavatam, Nirpa. Rupa Avyayasya Prameyasya Nirganasya Gunatmanaha Nirnam Nishreyas Arkaya Vyakir Bhagavato Nripa Nirgunasya Gunatmanaha Nrinam for humanity Nikshayasya for the highest benefit Artaya for the purpose Vyaktihi the personal appearance Bhagavataha of the Supreme Lord. Nripa, O King, of Yayasya, of Him who is inexhaustible. Aprameyasya, immeasurable. Nirgunasya, untouched by material qualities. Guna Atmanaha, the controller of the material modes. Translation, O King, the Supreme Lord is inexhaustible and immeasurable, and He is untouched by the material modes because He is their controller. His personal appearance in this world is meant for bestowing the highest benefit on humanity. And the purport. Since Lord Krishna descends to benefit mankind in general, why would he neglect innocent young girls who loved him more than anyone else did? Although the Lord awards himself to his pure devotees, he is avyaya, inexhaustible, because he is aprameya, immeasurable. He is also nirguna, free of material qualities, and thus those who intimately associate with him are on the same spiritual platform. He is gunatma, the controller, or original personality behind the modes of nature, and it is specifically for this reason that he is free of them. In other words, because the modes of nature are his energy, they cannot act upon him. Nrinam nukshayas arthaya vyaktir bhagavato nirpa avyayas ya prameyasya nirgunasya gunatmanaha. O King, the Supreme Lord is inexhaustible and immeasurable, and he is untouched by the material modes because he is their controller. His personal appearance in this world is meant for bestowing the highest benefit on humanity. So this verse 13 and the previous verses are responding Shukadeva Goswami responding to the question asked by Maharaj Parikshit in text 12, which was, O sage, Sri Parikshit Maharaj said, O sage, the gopis knew Krishna only as their lover, not as the Supreme Absolute Truth. So, how could these girls, their minds caught up in the waves of the modes of nature, free themselves from material attachment? So this is an answer to that question. And life lively discussion yesterday led me to go back and read the previous extensive purport quoting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explaining the Rishi Chari Gopis and all of that. Very elevated and esoteric and not meant for an ordinary audience discussion on the nature of the love of the gopis. But here we are, chapter 29, the nature of the love of the gopis. And so as the purport indicates, when Shukadeva Goswami, before the sages assembled to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, received this description about the gopis who had their husbands and children, and Krishna called for them to come and join him in the rasa dance, the sages had an expression on their faces that looked like, what? This is irreligious. What are we sitting here listening to this irreligious conduct? And why is Krishna doing irreligious conduct and all of that? Which, if we're to speak of the people that we hear that message from today, even the sages didn't have the proper understanding, and therefore they reacted the way that they reacted, and so this is to clear that misunderstanding. Specifically, Maharaj Pariksit asked the question so that Shukadeva Goswami could relieve the minds of the sages from that disturbed condition of regarding Krishna in some bad, negative way. So part of what we heard yesterday, built within the question, was they didn't understand him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet they had love for him, and therefore, at least according to the minds of the sages, you know, within the question is, their minds were moved by the modes of nature. So, in yesterday's purport, we heard this long reference from Skanda Purana where, in fact, in their previous lives, they had thorough transcendental knowledge. Yet in this life, as simple village cowherd girls, it didn't appear they went to Gurukula or, you know, Sanskrit scholarship, or they didn't have any apparent access in that life to deep philosophical understanding of who is Krishna and that he's the absolute truth. But that was there, as you say, stored or embedded within their merit, their prior qualification, and because of their position as lovers of Krishna in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, that opulence was eclipsed by the intensity of their love. So then the focus goes to the object upon which their love was focused. And that long purport also indicates, because of their attachment to Krishna, and these specifically the gopis that couldn't participate in rasa dance, their tivra viraha, their intense, painful, like negative sounding, painful feelings of separation, burned exhausted, incinerated, like demolished. They're the bad karma, whatever the bad karma, the affinity for matter type of karma. And then simultaneously, in their stage of feeling separation from him, the intensity of that feeling of separation led to, in their meditation upon him, embracing him, and the ecstasy that they felt, completely incinerated, annihilated, obliterated any of their punya karma. So all that was left was their pure attachment for Krishna, the material portion of their existence was obliterated, both the bad and the good, the lower influence of the lower modes of nature and actions performed according to those lower modes of nature, and even the material good portion, the happiness of being in the mode of goodness, conditioned by the mode of goodness, that happiness was also obliterated by that unique arrangement that Krishna had made. So the transcendental perspective of the Leela was that for those who are the eternally perfect Nitya Siddha gopis, he's simply enjoying, as later purports will repeatedly express, particularly Jiva Goswami, hammers it again and again. These gopis are there's no illicit activity. I touched upon it yesterday, but because his own potency. They're the laws of morality which Krishna gives have everything to do with something outside of ourselves, and thus the regulations that are imposed voluntarily and naturally imposed upon the living beings within this world that should and pious persons do follow for purpose of elevation from the lower modes to the higher modes. Those rules do not apply to Krishna when he is enjoying with his own potency, which is, again, the reference to the first verse, where by the season he became inspired for amorous pastimes, and thus he called upon his yogamaya potency. So it's Krishna enjoying with Krishna's own potency. It's no small point. It's like a major point. Krishna's enjoying with his own potency. Just like that wonderful verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srupa Damodar's verse, in which he says that the two forms Radha Krishna are one entity, eternally manifest as two. And she, the Ladini Shakti, is the internal pleasure potency of the potent, just like the sunshine and the sun. They're inseparable. So although the two, Radha Krishna, are manifest as in two forms, it's one entity. It takes, wrap your mind around that one. There's two forms that are one entity. And when Radha expands, it's still one entity. And Krishna is enjoying with his own internal potency, his pleasure potency and the expansion of his pleasure potency. And Jiva Goswami repeatedly reminds the reader of that. But then there's the Rishichari gopis and others who are in the coming to Krishna condition, and they're not yet fully free from material affinity. Although, like we discussed yesterday, there's this Sarup Gata. They fully have attraction for Krishna, yet some vestige, some residual effect of material affinity, and Krishna was freeing them for that by this pastime. And how is that possible? That's within this verse. where something that we hear again and again and again, the position of Krishna, or Sambandha Gyan, just anecdotal. There was a period of time in Gita Nagari where kind of following what was going on in Vrindavan, the VIHE, there were a few of us, Rabindra Srupa Prabhu and myself, and Sansrup Marsh came and participated a few times. We wanted to have a Gita Nagari Institute for Higher Education. So we had like week-long seminars. You know, different persons would speak on different topics. And it was really nice, except it was hard for people to take the whole week off, so we consolidated it just to weekends. But one of the topics that I chose, because I thought I was inspired by prayers from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So I started preparing for it, and it was an avalanche. I started going through the Bhagavatam and selecting, you know, sections that are prayers, and it turns out over half of the 18,000, something like over half of the verses, 18,000 verses, is prayers. Like Bhadra Narayan's expression is like trying to drink water out of a hose that's flowing full blast. You can't drink it all. It spills all over the place. There's so many prayers. So many prayers. And many, look at them carefully, many begin with praising Krishna's position as, like, you know, Sambandha Gyan. Who is this person who is being prayed unto? And these terms that are used here are some of those terms. The connotation is, it's the almightiness, it's the majesty, it's the source of everything. Like, you know, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Vatak Sarvam Pravartate, like Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, he's the Prabhava. He's the source, Prabhava, he's the source of everything. And our acharyas say everything means everything. Matter and the various manifestations of matter, spirit, and the varieties of expansions of his energies and potencies and marginal living entities and everything. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. Then says it backwards. Everything comes from him, he is the source of everything. Or say it forwards or backwards. He's everything. He's the absolute truth. Iti matva bhajante mam. Thus knowing, what do? You serve him. Bhajante mam. And that bhajante, we know this from Bhagavad Gita purport, the last purport of chapter 6, where Krishna is, that the topmost form of yoga is Shraddhavan Bhajate Yomam. And Saint Prabhupada explains this word bhaj. It's directly relevant to the gopis. Bhajante Mam, bhaj indicates service. It's not just like a feeling. There's a feeling, but the feeling then inspires service. The senses are engaged in the object of the senses. The impersonalists do the opposite, withdraw the senses, because that's where one gets into trouble. So withdraw the senses. In fact, burn the senses. The pasvis wish, you know, that's their endure painful austerities. So the demands of the senses don't rule anymore. Because one of the things I do is visit China. I've had to learn things that I didn't know before about Buddhism. And, you know, what the vision of Buddha is, and those who actually follow Buddhism. And it's, you know, very similar principle, just exactly as Prabhupada says. Their philosophy It is just a restatement of the same thing that impersonalism is. Or impersonalism is a restatement of just changing, using different words with the same philosophy. But the, you know, the Buddha's teaching is desire is the root of suffering, and so just burn out desire. Like, make it zero. And so when you don't have desire, what do you have? Nothing. So that's the goal. Become nothing. Because that's who we are, we're nothing. It's really amazing. Here's a little detail. There are many different varieties of Buddhism, and one of the most popular ones today, I don't know so much history beyond today, but there's a particular name for the brand of Buddhism. I'm sorry, I can't remember the brand name. But it's the something like the Holy Land Buddhism. And the idea is if you're like a really good Buddhist, you go to the Holy Land. It's like, you know, an upper planet somewhere. And there's a Buddha waiting for you. And there it's, you know, like opulence like heaven. But that Buddha, if you make it there, he'll teach you how to enter into the realm of nirvana, of nothingness. You go like through the realm of superlative somethingness to the realm of nothingness. That's like really the ultimate goal. Void, like zippo, nada, like nothing, nothingness. Now Prabhupada has taught us there's no such thing. There's two things, Krishna and Krishna's, and there's not a third thing following that. There's no such thing as void in all of the creation of God. Because void means something where Krishna or Krishna's doesn't exist, and there's no such thing. But that's the way where they want to go, to the realm of nothingness. So it's explicitly atheistic, but at least it's an honest atheistic as opposed to the other kind. Now, engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses, Rishikendra Rishikesha Sevanam, that's our program. That's what bhakti is. And now, the teaching that we're getting here has direct application to us, not because, you know, we should imitate or imagine ourselves to be like the gopis, but the position that they're in, where the affinity for Krishna is something that the practice of sadhana is to accomplish, withdraw our affinity for matter and replace it with affinity for Krishna, or strengthen our affinity for Krishna and thereby withdraw or reduce our affinity for matter. Like, you know, in the sadhana bhakti stage, this is a little nectar of devotion soundbite. There are three parts of nectar devotion: sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. And of all the regulations in sadhana bhakti, which are describing regulative ways in which the senses are to be engaged in service of the master of the senses, there's one rule that governs all of those different activities of the senses, and that's fix the mind upon Krishna. And the reference is yena tena prakarena mana krishne naveshayat sarve vidhi nisedhasyor etayor eva kinkara yena tena. Prabhupada translates that as somehow or other. This way, or that way, or some way, yena tena prakarena, like karana. Bring the mind to Krishna, mana krishne, Naveshayat. Naveshayat means one should fix. So it's not just like kind of over in that way generically. But fix the mind. Naveshayat. Manakrishne Naveshayat. Yena tena prakarena Manakrishne. Unto Krishna. It's like Radha and Radhe, or Hara and Hare. It's calling. It's an invocation or a vocative sense. Manakrishne Naveshayat. And all the vidhis, sarve vidhi, nisedhasyur, etayor eva kinkra. Kinkra means a servant. And all the vidhis are kinkaras of that one principle. They're like, Prabhupada's example to explain this is the queen, a good queen, is arrangements are made for the queen that she has everything. She has so many ladies in waiting or attendants, and as she moves about the palace of the king, they scurry behind her, and wherever she goes, they go. But her interest is not in the facilities that they provide for her. The good queen has only one thing on her mind, and that's the king. Because she's a good queen, she has that facility. So similarly, in the sadhana stage, those vidhis are attendants to the primary function. The one thing is to bring the mind to Krishna. And when the mind goes to Krishna, then the senses follow. And that's another stage, Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, and then Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. And the gopis are at that stage where their senses just follow the mind that's fixed upon Krishna. And because the object is, in real simple language, because the object is supremely pure, then the mind fixed upon the supremely pure object becomes pure or purified. And now back to this discussion, little discussion from yesterday of the Swarup Gata and Vastu Gata. Krishna is bringing the gopis that are in this Swarup Gata to the Vastu Gata position by playing upon his flute. And it's forcible. It's not like, you know, a nice melodious sound. Krishna's flute playing isn't just, you know, it's not like our flute playing. It's not like a musical sound that's pleasing, although it's a musical sound that's pleasing. Just recently visiting in Vrindavan, we visited Ter Kadamba. And there were a number of new people that had never been there before. They described their experience, and they just fell in love with Ter Kadamba. There's something like very special about it, mystical, magical, and, you know, although they're new, they don't exactly understand, it just like felt something. It's that kind of a place. Because it's so dear to Krishna. And ter means call. Kadamba is the type of tree. So Krishna would climb the Kadamba tree and he would play upon his flute. But his flute wasn't just like a musical sound. He was calling through his flute playing the names of the cows, the groups of cows, by playing upon his flute. And when the cows and the groups of cows would hear their names being called, it thrilled their hearts, and they would moo and come running, just like the gopis. They would come running. So Krishna knows different ways of making his flute than sometimes call the gopis, just by playing upon his flute. But it's not just, oh, a charming flute song, although certainly it's a charming flute song. Specifically, the languages, forcibly, they were drawn. Of course, and from their side, it's, there's a reciprocation. There's the feelings of love for Krishna. And so when hearing they're being called by Krishna through his flute song, they're forcibly brought there by the power of love. The same as in Brahma Samhita, when from the chanting of the Gopal mantra, which Brahma chanted for thousands of years, according to the Jiva Goswami's commentary, thousands of years, and that's not our years, it's thousands of some other kinds of years, thousands of years, where there's nothing but darkness in all direction. I mean, we'd go stir crazy. Thousands of years just chanting Gopal mantra. And then he had this experience of realization of Krishna and his identity as his eternal servant. And then, with that qualification, he then heard Krishna's flute. The sound of Krishna's flute entered into his eight ears and then into his heart, and it came out of his mouth as Kam Gayatri. So Krishna's, the point is, Krishna's flute isn't, we shouldn't think of it as ordinary. And the hearing of the gopis is also not ordinary. So as the sound of Krishna's flute and the Gayatri mantra that came from the mouth of Lord Brahma is non-different than Krishna, because this is the realm of the absolute, where each of these things are non-different from one another. It's just the experience that one may have of that which is absolute. And because, so we're hearing in this verse, the explanation given by Shukadeva Goswami to answer Maharaj Pariksit's question, which was to relieve the doubts of the sages that weren't on Maharaj Pariksit's level of understanding and realization, that because of this Sambandhagyan reality, these terms that are used here, Krishna is supremely pure, and thus it's not that the minds of the gopis were entangled in the modes of nature. It's not like that, because they are fixed upon Krishna, who is all of these things. Their minds were fully purified. Their love was not lust, as we discussed a little bit yesterday. Completely pure, free from any material taint. And why? Shukadeva Goswami is explaining. Because, O King, the Supreme Lord has these qualities of, he enters into this world to give his association, and by giving his association, one becomes fully purified. So as they fix their mind upon him, he, who is avyayam, that's not something material. Like we're more accustomed to hearing Isha Upanishad, where the invocation verse, Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate, he can expand himself into so many Purnams, and he's still Purnam, or 1 minus 1 equals 1. That's not good math for something worldly. Or Prabhupada's simple example, we've all heard this many times, you take a piece of paper, rip it into little pieces, and throw it onto the floor. So the original piece of paper is now gone, because it's now little pieces all over the floor. But the nature of Krishna is little pieces distributed, and he's still whole. He's still Purnam, inexhaustible. That's Krishna, or the absolute truth is avyayam. And how can you measure that which is avyayam? You can't, because it's avyayam. It's inexhaustible. So this next term, aprameya, So he is, Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, and then Nirgunasya. He's not influenced by the modes of nature, because the modes of nature are under him. Maya Jakshena Prakriti. Suyate. So he's not under the influence of the modes of nature, not possible. They're under his direction, not conversely. They cannot affect him. So the mind that's then placed upon that, which is avyam and aprameya and nirgunasya, how can that be tainted with the modes of nature? If there had been, like in our case, some, or the gopis that weren't perfectly free from their contamination, by fixing their minds upon Krishna in the way that Krishna reigns, by his calling them with his flute, and they were restrained, and they couldn't come, and their attachment was tivra viraha, painful separation. It burned all of that, whatever that was, vestige, residual amount that was left, gone. Just like we, last night, there was a little discussion, I read from a verse from Kapila Dev's Instructions to Devahuti, chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, in which Kapila says to Devahuti that the process of bhakti alone, there isn't any other process that can do this, the process of bhakti dissolves the subtle body. So it's the subtle, when the gross body is kaput, is no longer functioning, the soul leaves the body carried by the subtle body and goes to the next body. So what is it that, it's the subtle body that carries us on in material existence, and what is it about this subtle body that does that? There's desires. So try to make desires zero, because that's our problem. We have desires, so make your desires zero. But you can't, because it's not the nature of the soul. So you just cover it, smother it, like stab it to death. Spiritual suicide, Prabhupada calls it. You can't. The soul can't be killed. There's an innate condition of desire, because that's our purified condition. So the solution is not make desire zero, make desires pure. And what's that? It's desire in relation to Krishna's happiness. So the problem is this false ego thing, where we think ourselves as, our identity is we're a separate enjoyer. So to have that separate enjoyer mentality, Krishna has to disappear, because he's the real enjoyer. So, but Krishna can't disappear unless he's just like covered. Our perception of him is covered. So we're covered with Maya. And the first of those elements of Maya is our dear friend, false ego. So how do you get rid of false ego? By awakening your true ego. And how do you awaken your true ego? Chant Hare Krishna, because the meaning is, please engage me in service. Your service. Because we're constitutionally servants, we're engaged in servants of the senses, in material consciousness, and instead of serving material senses, serve Krishna's senses. I mean, the principle is very simple. And again, emphasis on the mind. What the mind does, where the mind goes, the objects upon which the mind is attracted. It's in this long purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Sometimes devotees, in addition to chanting Hare Krishna, they allow their minds to hear other sound vibrations or to contemplate other objects, and, you know, mixed. So much for Krishna, so much for my senses. Or, you know, the misconception of me. I call it the two-pocket program. So much for Krishna, so much for me. Me, Krishna, Krishna. And just make it Krishna, Krishna. when our attention goes simply to Krishna, not just making the sound, but the mind goes to Krishna. Small thing. Engage in my devotional service and always think of me. Yena tena prakarena mana krishnena veshayat. It's so there's the sadhana of that, and this is way beyond the sadhana stage. This is at the ecstatic love stage. And that each of the stages has the same purpose. The sadhana stage, the raganuga sadhana bhakti stage, and this stage that just describing the same principle applies, although it's different stages. And that's bringing the mind to Krishna, where there's no other affinity other than Krishna. Whatever residual vestige there may be that we may have of some affinity for something else, if we really are careful and thoughtful and have the association especially of those that have such affinity, then the mind can go exclusively to Krishna. And that's the conclusion of what's being described in the purport. Since Lord Krishna descends to benefit mankind in general, why would he neglect innocent young girls who loved him more than anyone else did? Not liberation is not even the question. He freed them certainly from their material affinity, which is, you know, a liberation, but he gave his association more than just neutral state. He gave his association. He came for that purpose. And therefore, you know, liberation was already included. And they said yes. And that's needs to be our program. We had a few years back, we had a retreat in Giranagari that the theme of it was say yes to Krishna. Everyone that came got a say yes to Krishna button. Because our problem is we say no to Krishna. And we complain about the arrangement that Krishna makes for our lives. And why isn't it like this, Krishna? And so on. And one of the exercises we did was someone stood at one of those flip chart things and asked devotees, just in general, can you think of something that, like, irritates you? You know, in your family or in the world or, you know, something, it irritates you. And, you know, it started slowly, but after it got up a little steam, it was like laughter all over the place because the sheets were filling up really fast. And it got to like 8 or 9 sheets, and like, okay, we have a good list of things that irritate us. Then let's go back and say, how do you turn, why is it that it irritates? Because this is an arrangement that's outside of our control. So why does it irritate us? Because we're not saying yes to Krishna's arrangement. It doesn't mean we have to like it, but why we irritate it? So is there something we can do to flip it around? And so we can say yes to Krishna. So they had a role-playing session. We're like, you know, a husband and wife. And it turned out, like, you know, when they were paired up, it was like the reality of what happens in their household, where the husband says and the wife goes, oh, you know, garbage. You know, you irritate me. And then, you know, how do you turn it around to, like, say yes to Krishna? And then doesn't it make it easier to go to where you want it to be? Like, you know, the higher position, the higher modes of nature. Anyway, the principle, especially if our devotional practices are very carefully, very, very carefully executed, where we're not just completing our sadhana duties, but increasingly, like as part of the cultivation, that the mind is with Krishna as we're doing that, chanting, reading, and applying those things that we're reading to our practical service. What time am I supposed to end? 10 minutes ago? Huh? I can take questions. I just want to say one other thing. from this Brahma Samhita seminar that I did, I've been chanting Gayatri Mantra for, 40-something years. But within the those little difficult to break down and understand what Bhaktisiddhanta was saying in those purports, there's a description, very nice description, of the meaning of the mantras. Gopal mantra particularly is like a very nice description. And even like, the swaha, swaha, that comes at the end, like we do in yajnas. It has its meaning when we do yajnas, and specifically in the Gopal mantra, it's swaha. It's submission of one's true identity unto the names mentioned. Krishna, these different features of Madan Gopal, or Madan Mohan, and Govinda, and Gopinath. Swaha. So specifically, when chanting mantra, this is in Hari Bhakti Vilas, this is with this idea of the mind going to Krishna. When chanting mantra, one should meditate on the meaning, because there's a sound, even if it's the sound silently within the mind. What's the meaning when doing the duty, using the senses in service to Krishna's senses? What's the meaning? It's enjoined that we should bring the mind to the meaning as we're doing our mantra. And as we're doing all the other services that we do, like worshipping the deity, or cooking for the deity, or carrying out your occupational duties, or whatever it is, mind goes to Krishna. And practice, bring the mind to Krishna with a full understanding of Sambandhagyan, like this verse, who is Krishna? Since he is all these wonderful things, how can there be anything other than for the gopis and for us, other than reaching or moving towards, in our case, but in their case, reaching the stage of perfection when there is actual attachment for the object. Whether there's cognizance of Krishna is the absolute truth or not, in the case of the gopis, whether he is or not. So for our position in the sadhana stage, we should know he is. And what does it mean that he is? And he is. And bring the mind to him. And purification will follow. The subtle body and all the disturbances is caused by the fact that we have one will be dissolved. Leaving what? A pure mind and pure intelligence and purified senses. And nothing but the desire to serve Krishna, even we're in this turbulent material atmosphere. And so the material atmosphere doesn't touch you, doesn't bring you down or cause degradation. Even you're in that atmosphere, pristine, because of the mind, that act of cultivating attachment of the mind to Krishna with a appreciation of the supremely pure, all-powerful, immeasurable, unlimited, beyond the modes of nature, Krishna. That's our program. Okay, so I'm going to stop, see if there's any discussion.
When we say the subtle body is dissolved, Maharaj, you said just now the pure mind and the pure intelligence. That means part of the subtle body, right?
Part of the
subtle body.
No, right? this soul has intrinsic in the soul pure mind, pure intelligence, not material mind, material intelligence. Those coverings are coverings of the soul. They're awarded to the living entity that's rebellious. But when that subtle body is dissolved. It's not, there's nothing left. There's a spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence. Prabhupada's example is like a glove, and you just have a glove lying there, it just lies there, but you put a hand in it and start wiggling the fingers, and the fingers of the glove move, because the fingers are moving. So supposing you take the glove off, it doesn't mean you don't have a hand anymore. When the coverings are dissolved, the subtle body is dissolved, the pure functions, pure mind, pure intelligence, they're functioning. How to serve Krishna, and then the act of service to Krishna with purified mind and intelligence. Yes.
Very nice class, Maharaj. I appreciate your ending with importance of appreciation and subtle body. In the third canto, second chapter, verse 19, 20, 21, where Uddhava was asking or expressing his feeling to Vidura.
Yeah.
And then Prabhupada.
Nice section, very nice section.
Yes, very nice chapter, thank you. I always think about it. That Srila Prabhupada gave probably one of the most important purport to me for my understanding, that though Uddhava was expressing that he was deprived, but that was his out of separation, his feeling.
Yes.
The Shishupal, yesterday we discussed, Shishupal got liberation, he told to Vidura, but I am deprived, I am not getting that. So in the purport, I think 20 texts, Prabhupada says that those in nectar devotion and mixing with nectar devotion, one place in 24th chapter, Prabhupada says, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, what is the need of dressing oneself so beautiful? What is the purpose, Krishna, when they are so beautiful, it's unparalleled, asamordha. So then in this purport he says, Krishna, when Sudarshan Chakra dissolved the subtle body, then there are three perceptions is seen. One who did not appreciate, like Shishupal, enter into Brahma Jyoti, Prabhupada says. And those who appreciated seeing Krishna's beauty, they enter into Vaikuntha. And those who develop love, they went to Krishna Loka. So appreciation, as you said at the end, very nice. Appreciation is so important in the Buddhist life.
And what we appreciate, it's like that's subtle. That's where the mind goes. And where the mind goes is where we go. But so there's that's the deeper rooted subtle thing that we need to pay attention to is where our affinity or affection or appreciation goes. And then, you know, so here's the activity, here's the mind, and behind both the mind and the activity is this all-important function. Like, what do we value? What's important to us? And we need that. That's where attention needs to go as we're cultivating our Krishna consciousness. Yes? Here comes the microphone so our listeners can hear.
You know, you have to bring the mind to Krishna. But when you're doing a service, say like cooking, your mind is observing the practical aspect of the service, you know, like, you know,
good.
You have to salt, now you have to do this.
Yes.
So when you say bring the mind to Krishna, could you elaborate a little more?
Yes. While doing what you just described, behind that is, you can say it affirmatively or say it in a questioning way. Why am I doing this? This is how I was trained as a brahmachari. Each thing from the beginning activity, the alarm goes off. Why am I getting up at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever the time is, 3:30 or whatever the time is? Why am I doing this? And then going to take bath, first thing. Why am I doing this? Applying the tilak. Why am I doing this? Putting on my dhoti. Why am I doing this? not just mindlessly doing because it's a vidhi, but why am I doing this? You know, it's because Prabhupada said to do it. But why did Prabhupada say to do it? Because it's a regulation that helps our mind go to Krishna. It's helping us to get attached to Krishna. So while in the kitchen, it's not like, it's very similar to the point that was just made, that the mind has to go to the activity. Certainly, you can't like be in la-la land while you're in the kitchen. You have to be attentive to what you're doing. But the deeper is, for whom are you doing it? Well, the feature of love or attachment to a person. Why am I doing it this way instead of that way? Why am I here at all? It's fundamental. I could be doing something else or whatever. So for whom? The affection or the affinity or the appreciation. What's important to me? It's not, so I get a pat on the back, say, oh, you made a nice subject. And I get, some 3 stars after my name. Maybe I'll get 5 next week. But so it's not for that kind of reward. It's the relationship with Krishna. So for whom we are doing. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. And it's true for everything. Everything. Like as we're sitting here right now, doing what we're doing. For whom? Not just to give a nice class and hear nicely and put a bunch of information in your information basket so you can go home and say, wow, I've got more information in my information basket now. I made some progress. Not that. It's this other. It's the bhakti principle. The bhakti principle is practical activity along with the affinity or developing attachment for Krishna. Like this. The purpose of sambandhagyan is to draw our attention away from other things and to Krishna. And that should be guiding our activity. That why Krishna? Iti madva bhajante mam. Go ahead.
The mind must function on different levels. So different activities involve different concentration.
Sure.
Like for example, the example of cooking is like an immediate thing. You have to think, now I'm doing this. Sometimes you're not consciously thinking, why am I doing it, or the other things, the philosophy.
It's a cultivation, as Rupa Goswami teaches. Anukulyena, Krishna Anushilana, Anushilana. Anukulyena, Krishna Anushilana. It's a gradual, so like, whatever it is, you're driving your car, you have to pay attention to the road, you can't be spacing out. But for whom are you doing this? When there's attachment, you're clear about for whom you're doing it while you're driving the car or cooking the offering or dressing the deity or chanting your japa. It's love that's moving the activity. I want to do it nicely because it's going to be for Krishna. So that's something that's behind the detail of what goes in, the things that I need to do in the kitchen. And the sequence of things and make it come out so they're all done at the same time. And all those details of the art of cooking, behind it is for whom? So it's love that the mind is a binary, it's a one or a zero kind of thing. So we can't like think of Krishna and then go back over here and think about the offering. Okay, now think about the offering. Oops, I forgot Krishna. Go back to think of Krishna. It's not that. It's not like jumping back and forth like a jumping bean between the practical and for Krishna. It's a simultaneous for the purpose of. So as I'm doing the vidhis, and so it all starts, frankly, or practically, it all starts with chanting. How much attachment for Krishna we have has to do with the spirit of, or the quality of the soul for wishing to please Krishna, having been awakened through the contact with the holy name. And then the rest flows. We cultivate it, but it flows from that. Anything else? Ramiya? I think this will be our last question. We're 12 minutes after.
So Maharaj, I was wondering, is it somewhat artificial in the case of cooking to think like, well, I want to spice it because Krishna will like it like this, and I just cook it this way and he'll be very pleased because I did it the way he likes it? Is that just, we can't really do that at this stage?
I don't cook, so it's a little difficult for me to transfer or to express, you know, the way that you described it. Yes, it seems artificial, but another way to describe it is, this is going to be offered to Krishna, and therefore I want it to be very nice. That motivation behind the detail of, you know, the activity is what's important. You know, so in relation to my service, that, you know, like this, speaking, not just so it's, or administration, not just so it comes out, but, you know, that the real important thing is that Krishna is pleased. Even if it, like Duryodhana was a good manager, but he was atheistic. But Krishna wanted him replaced. That was one of the concerns of, or considerations of Yudhisthira. He's good. He's a good, he, you know, things are in order. But that's not okay. Well, why is it not okay? Supposing somebody's a good cook, but they don't have any devotion for Krishna. We want the devotion for Krishna. That's the goal. And the medium of service is for that goal. So so it's not exactly as you said. That would be, I would agree, that's artificial. So how do you cultivate? If not that way, how do you cultivate? I'm expressing a number of things, but how you chant your japa nicely, and it will be there. You'll be thinking as you're cooking, this should be very nice for Krishna. And Krishna's pleased by the devotion. You know, when Krishna visited the Vidura's home and his wife offered, you know, there are different versions of Mahabharata, but, you know, the banana peel instead of banana, or porridge instead of, you know, something nice. And he was fully satisfied. Because of the love with which it was offered. That's the important ingredient. That's what will be pleasing to Krishna. And because it's done, when services are done in that way, Krishna will make it nice. Krishna will make it nice. That's what's important. Okay, I'm going to end. Thank you very much. Prabhupada, deep breath.